Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas on the Toolkit team.
I'm Clara Bayaria, tech lead on the Android Toolkit team.
I'm Florina Montanesco. I'm a developer advocate.
I am here in the London office for the week, so I thought it would be interesting to grab a couple of people from the London office and talk to them about what they do. I happen to know them already, so I kind of knew what they did. Clara and Florina have been working on text-related stuff. In fact, you're doing a presentation at Google I.O. soon and doing other related stuff. So let's talk about text.
Yay.
Text is easy, right? So this will be a short one.
Yeah, I think.
Yep.
Okay.
5-10 minutes.
Okay. Done. Great. So maybe we'll start with spammables. In particular, you have been doing a bunch of tweet spam. Spammables. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about spammables then. Why have you been tweeting all this stuff about spans?
Why I've been spanning everyone with span related things. Well, spans, I think, are some of the most powerful concepts that I work with, at least in terms of the UI. They give you access to Canvas, to the text paint. You can do a lot of cool things with them. But I realized that I didn't know so much about it, and like me, a lot of other developers out there. Part of it was because, let's say that the Java docs needed improvement.
No. On Android? No.
Just these ones, the span ones. So we worked on them a little bit. We've added examples of how to use them. We've added images so you can actually see the result of the span if you want to apply it. And yeah, while working on it, I discovered so many cool things. And I discovered also how deep in the system the spans are and how powerful they are.
So actually, let's take a bigger step back and say, what is span? What's spannable? Why are they so powerful? What exactly are they doing? Like, I know you can set a string on a text view and it will display that string. So what's the difference?
So usually when you're working with a text view or any class that extends from text view, by default, you can style it. You would probably use attributes or styles and themes. But if you want to actually style the text at character or at paragraph level, then you would use spans. So spans in the end are just markup objects. They actually just extend from object and allow you to define all sorts of parameters, like how the color of a text can be, or they allow you to add fancy things like bullet points to a paragraph. That would be the TLDR, I guess.
Okay, so if you're just talking about styling on a character level, I would think, oh, it's just a data structure for holding the attributes that we're going to set on the paint object per character as opposed to the entire string. But then when you mention bullet items, that's beyond that. And we also have the concept of HTML text, right?
Yeah.
And links, and all of that can be encapsulated in spans. So
exactly.
It seems like it covers all of those things.
Yeah, so it's not just text, not just character level, but also paragraph level.
Yeah.
And in general, so for example, if you have a text that's HTML, if you do HTML from HTML, then the result is still spans. So that method just returns your list of spannables or spannable.
It returns you a spannable string that has all the markup objects that it read, like it translates from HTML into the span world, which is Android and text specific.
So under the hood, actually everything is spannable when you're working with HTML.
Do you have a single spannable for that text view, or is it a collection of these things? Is a spannable a collection of spans? Like what's the breakdown for hierarchy here?
We have several classes. The base interfaces are spanned and spannable. So one allows you to mutate both text and markup, and one allows you just to work with the text. So it's immutable text and markup. And then apart from these, you would work with spannable string and spannable string builder to add or update the text and the markup. So in the end, to a text, you would attach a spannable. The framework provides all sorts of classes for you to work with spans. So for example, you can style the foreground color or the background color of a text. But in the end, all of these extend from a few base classes, which is character style, paragraph style, depending on how you want to style it at the character level or a paragraph level. And also, these are either metric affecting or appearance affecting spans. So for example, if you're just changing the color of a text, you're not changing the size, you just change how it looks, so the appearance. Right. But if, for example, you're changing the size of a few characters in a text, then you're also changing the metrics. So this means that the text will need to re-lay out.
Right. So it's a difference between invalidation versus layout.
Exactly.
Just like we have in views.
Yeah. Depending on what kind of work you want to do with the spans, you would extend from these base classes. As I was saying, the framework already offers a quite extensive set of spans. I think they would cover all the basic needs of developers. If you need more, if you need some special customization, then you can just create your own custom spans.
You can expand the set.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go on to some of the difficulties. So you have been tweeting about this for 31 days. No?
No, that was about Kotlin.
Oh, that was the tweet span.
Mm-hmm.
Span. Wait, but you were tweeting about, you were working on Spanables recently,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So there I was trying to explain how spans work, what spans are. And I also went a bit more deep in how spans work under the hood and how the platform uses spans. Because, well, as I was saying, in the end, spans are all objects, but you would extend from some base classes. Well, actually, these base classes that the framework defines are used pretty much everywhere in the text area of the framework. The framework checks whether you have an layout margin span when it needs to decide on how to draw your text on canvas. Same when it needs to lay out your lines or your paragraphs.
Okay.
And then apart from this, what actually I found very interesting is how to define your own custom spans. Because, well, every app is unique. Therefore, span needs tend to be unique.
Can you give us an example?
I think the easiest one that I can find right now is the bullet span. So right now, you're allowed to set the bullet size in terms of pixels and the color and the distance between the text and the bullet. And when I say right now, I mean in P, because before you were not allowed to set the bullet size. You were only allowed to set the color and the margin. This is quite a powerful feature, I would say, because it means that your text just ends up being shifted on one side. You end up drawing things on canvas, which is a bullet. Then if you want to do something more, for example, let's say that you also want to add a background to that bullet, or you want to combine things like adding quotes or all sorts of other styling to that text, you'll be able to create your own custom spans. So there are several ways of creating your own custom spans.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious, like, how custom can you get? Do you end up in your own canvas drawing code?
I think it depends on your needs.
Okay.
So in the case of a bullet span, if you don't want to render a circle, but you want to render a square as a bullet point, then yes, you would draw directly a square on the canvas. So you would probably implement your own bullet span by extending the leading margin span in that case and copying some of the functionality that the bullet span provides.
Okay, so then is there an onDraw method? Like, I've never seen this part of the code before, but I'm familiar with the parallel and views, right?
Exactly. So you don't really have an onDraw method. You would implement a method that has access to the canvas and to the text pane. So all the basic elements that the text would work with afterwards to actually render all these elements. And then this method would be called, I think, before the text is actually drawn.
Okay.
So then the text view would know that, okay, this is the canvas that I will use where already you have drawn your square,
yeah.
And it knows that it will use that specific text pane that you set with those specific properties.
Okay, so you don't need to set these up, like they're set up for you, like all the properties are set on the canvas before, and then all you need to do is draw your geometry. And
yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly. But things with spans don't stop here. There's more, because even if you want to build your own spans, some of the things that you do, actually, you might just be able to extend from the bullet span. Let's say that you just want to have a bullet span where the text has a different color. That's all, nothing else. By default, when you're working with a bullet span, the text just has the default
the
text
default
color.
For the text
yeah,
view.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in order to do this, you can either extend the bullet span class, and then when drawing, you just set the text paint, yeah. Or you can just extend from the leading margin span, which I think is the class from where the bullet span extends, and then you would do a similar functionality as the bullet span does. So you might wonder why and how you decide which case to do, because if you would re-implement all the bullet span functionality, that might seem like an overkill. Yeah. But I think what plays a very important role here is whether you want to copy that text or not, the text that has that span. Because there are a lot of interesting things happening when you're trying to pass the text either in the same process or in between processes. So when I say in between process, I'm saying, for example, between activities.
Okay.
So
Between activities that are in different processes.
No. Between activities
okay,
in your
same
own
process
application.
Between activities.
Yeah.
Copy-paste is a very easy example. Like when you copy a text, it goes into the clipboard service, which happens to not be your process.
Right.
So even if you're copying text within your same activity between two boxes, that's an intra-process.
Okay.
Yeah, in between processes.
So what gets copied must depend on what it was. So if it's a simple string that was set on the text view, presumably it's just going to be a string or a char sequence in the clipboard, right? But if it's a spannable, then it's going to be everything else associated with it?
Almost.
But the E is silent. We just leave the E out.
Because the framework doesn't know about your custom span. It only knows about the framework spans. Because you're copying text, right? So this means that everything has to be parceled and unparceled.
Yeah.
So especially, I think if you're copying in your own application, you'd say, well, it's my app. It knows about what spans I'm defining.
Yeah.
But if you're copying in another app, like, I don't know, you're copying some text to the Messenger application, then you can't guarantee that the app where you're copying knows your span.
Sure.
Chances are it doesn't. So this means that the framework will only keep the framework spans.
Okay.
So this means that in my case, with the bullet span, if I'm extending from the bullet span, setting that foreground color, I'll just get that base bullet span. But things don't stop here, because depending, of course, on the API levels, maybe some properties are lost. For example, in P, we've extended the functionality of the bullet span, allowing you to set the size of the bullet. The default size, I think it's 2 pixels. So this means that when you're copying your bullet span to that other app, you'll end up with a bullet that's 2 pixels. I think an even better example is the quote span, where you just see a blue 1 pixel line. So even if you created your own fancy quote that's, I don't know, has a your nice pink color of the app with a 5 pixels width, because the default values for the quote span are blue 1 pixel, that's how you will get it in the other application. Because
this is not dependent on version. This is just we only have the base platform capabilities.
Yeah, exactly. But for example, in P, we've added this extensive functionality of the quote span where you can set both the size and the color. It means that in P, if you would copy that quote span, it would look correctly.
Okay.
It would look correct.
So back to the clipboard example, it seems unfortunate if we're copying it into the clipboard with reduced functionality or reduced attributes, mm-hmm. and then we paste it into the same application, even the same activity somewhere, then it's not going to come in with all the attributes?
We've tried looking around this. The main problem is the clipboard service does unparcel the text you give it. And it never knows where the destination will be. So there was a couple of API revisions ago, we added this check where basically the parceling functions of spans were hidden on purpose. So it goes through an internal parceling and unparceling flow, just because we never know where you're going to paste. And unparceling in a bad place, say in another app that doesn't recognize your span, suddenly will mean that maybe we crash because we can't class load your custom span. So the problem with clipboard service is you copy into it, but you don't know where you're going to copy out of. So sadly, that's something we can't fix at the moment.
Right. I guess in my naive view, it seems like there could be some metadata that you could associate with
the one thing you can do is there's a special span called an annotation span. And basically what it does is instead of having the actual fields like bullet size, and it just has annotation. So you save basically a key and a value. And because that is a platform span, you could translate your custom functionality into an annotation span with all the data you need. And then on the other side, retranslate back. And then that will be kept. It's kind of an extra step of work for developers. But it means that they can actually pass information through. And it's just dependent on, does the receiving side know about these annotations and use them or not?
But actually, even if you're passing your string as an intent, you would still lose all of this functionality. So you would still only get the framework spans. So you would just pass it as start intent with an extra, and then you would get it as a char sequence, and that's it.
Right. No, I was thinking of the thing, not that you would be starting the intent, but that you know, you're switching between these sub-activities, or you're just, you know, I want to copy it from this paragraph and I want to put it in the next paragraph, and it goes in without all the niceties. But, oh, that's sad. Okay. Anyway, that's that.
But as a conclusion, this means that whenever you want to create your own custom span, you should decide whether it's okay for you to copy text or not. So based on this, you would decide whether your bullet span, your custom bullet, fancy bullet, will be just extending from the bullet span or just from the leading margin. And this means that when the text is copied from one place to another, you won't have, I don't know, a strange bullet point or a strange quote sign, but rather you would just have pretty plain text.
Yeah. So are there other elements that you found powerful? You talked about some of the platform capabilities that you learned about along the way. Is it?
Yes.
Could you talk about those? Okay, such as?
So to be honest, before working with spans, the only way I was setting text was using set text or in the XML. That's pretty much it. But there's another method that's also called set text, but also gets as a parameter a buffer type. So that buffer type is either normal, I think that was the default value, so when you're not doing anything special with the text, but it can also be spannable or editable. So why is this relevant? I see this look in your eyes.
I was just thinking it's either normal or abnormal, but okay. All right. Spannable or what? What's
editable.
Editable. Edible. Edible text. All right. Great.
Editable would only be used with edit text, of course. Mm-hmm. But spannable could be used when you're passing spannables. So when you know that the text that you're setting is a spannable, then you could use that. And this can actually help with performance, depending on what you're doing with the text afterwards. So if, for example, you want to update the text, let's say that you have a bullet span text that afterwards you want to disable it. So let's say you want to change the color of the bullet and the color of the text. So you want to change the spans that are attached to it. If you would pass the text to the text view by calling setText with this buffer type, then all you need to do is get the text, cast it to spannable, and update the spans to it. So like this, you're avoiding a copy of the spans, and you're avoiding setting the text again.
Okay, so you're just passing the reference into the thing that's already created somewhere else?
Yeah, that's pretty much so. Under the hood, whenever you're calling setText, the text will create an internal copy of whatever you passed there. And by default, it's char's sequence.
Yep.
But we'll know about their spans, but everything will be immutable. Even if you're making changes to the same object that you passed, that, of course, won't be visible to the text view, which is how it should be. But if you know that you want to change the text and you want to, let's say, improve the performance of your application by avoiding calling setText multiple times whenever you need to update just these spans, you can just set the text once with this parameter, buffer text spannable, and then just get the text from the text view and cast it to spannable and then work with your spans.
So the main difference here is you're manipulating the actual instance that text view is holding onto instead of copies. And that means that when you've made changes to your text view, and if you call setText with the entire text again, we need to take the text and relay out it, make all the calculations again from scratch. When you're working directly with our copy, you can change one of the spans and say, we will detect if the span that you change is only an appearance changing span. Say you only chose to change the color of one word. We suddenly don't have to go and relay out the entire text. We know that the thing that changed is only a draw invalidation and not a layout invalidation.
Okay.
But it is also like a double-edged sword, right? Like you are working with the copy that TextView is working with as well. So obviously any changes you make will be immediately visible.
So I would call this like a power user
feature,
because you are saving both memory and like performance.
Yeah, it would be interesting, I think, for people to take a look at it. If they are working heavily with spannables, then they should investigate whether this is helpful. So both editable, I still like editable. Editable as well as spannable are basically the same concepts. It's you have just told the text view that the text is mutable, and you're going to be working with a reference.
Editable is a more of a special case.
Okay, so how does that differ from spannable, other than that it's not a spannable?
It's not a spannable, and it would be used with the edit text.
The key difference is whether only the markup is editable or the entire text and the markup are editable.
Yeah. Okay.
It changes how TextView internally treats this text and what internal tools we use to lay out the text. So if you're going to be changing, if you tell us it's an editable text, we will make sure that we use a flexible enough infrastructure below that we can actually remeasure the little parts that you're adding to the text instead of measuring the entire text all the time. Mm. But it does cause performance issues. If you're not going to edit the text, you should never tell us it's editable because we're adding all this infrastructure that you won't use.
It also seems like in the Spannable case, it's entirely possible that you could be making changes that won't cause the heavy measure layout pass. Whereas with editable, like what other changes are you going to make on the text? Mm-hmm. They're all going to cause
three different layers. Like if you just set a text, it's immutable in both ways. If you set a spannable, the markup is editable. And if you set an editable, both the text and the markup are editable.
Okay.
So many words.
So actually, speaking of measuring, we were talking earlier about measurement costs. What did you learn about that?
Well, in P, there's a new API.
Well, but before we get that, that's just a little teaser that we'll toss out there. But before we get there, how does text work internally for measuring? Right. So can you talk about how? Yeah.
Sure. So when you give us a text, there's a lot of work that has to happen in the background to render that, right? The main part of which is for each of the little characters you gave us, and we have to match it with the font that we're going to use. We have to look up every single glyph, measure that, and measure each word. And the way our system works is a word is kind of a base unit that we use. So we will look up, say, in hello, we will look up the H, the E, the L, and the O, and we'll position them all together and measure that one word, its height, its width, its advancement. And that's all data that we have to calculate even before putting the words into a line, then trying to break up lines like, okay, these four first words fit into line number one, then we have to go into line number two. On top of that, add like hyphenation, justification, all that kind of stuff. And then in the end, we take all this data and we just render it. So there's a lot of expensive work happening, especially the very first time you set text, which is just us trying to figure out like what are the dimensions and how do we place the text on the dimensions that we have to be able to then render it later. And the base unit that we have, again, is this word cache. So this works internally in the text stack. And it's just a way for us, if you try to render the word, say the word the appears very often in your text, right? So if you're trying to render this very long paragraph, the word the probably appears several times in the same font. So then we can cache, we can actually hit the cache on, okay, we know how exactly the dimensions of this word. We don't need to recalculate many times. Does that make sense?
It does, but there's some nuances there. So when you were first describing, like we need to measure all the various permutations, it seems like that could be infinite, but it's not, right? So we're measuring all the possible syllable permutations, right?
Yeah,
like the,
so we
the
measure
ways that we're going to break down the word, but it's not on a character by character basis.
No, so we first take the glyphs for each character and we mount the words. Word is the first unit. Then, as you said, like if we want to do hyphenation and breaking up words, that's something that is enabled by default in TextViews in the material theme and is quite costly because, as you say, like we don't know where the hyphen will go. Like if a word has five syllables, there's four possible breaking points within that word. So the thing we will have to measure, which is extremely expensive, is for each possible breaking point, we need to measure the two halves of the word, how much that would fit. And it's not as easy as saying, well, it's the width of the first two characters and the width of the following six characters, because we also need to take into account the hyphen. So we actually do all this job of calculating every single permutation for hyphenation plus the hyphen in each one of them and save all this data so that then when we have to lay out the words into a line, we can figure out if we need to hyphenate that word or not.
Okay, so let's take an example. So someone has a text view with the word spantastic in it, right? So we've got three syllables.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to break in possibly two places.
So we're going to have the entire word measured.
Yep.
And then we're going to have span and tastic with a hyphen after span.
Yep.
We're going to have span tas hyphen and then tick.
Yep.
Oh, and the full word. So three permutations, right?
Okay.
Full word and the two possible breakpoints.
Okay. And those are going to happen like the first time we measure that thing, we're going to measure all three of those.
If hyphenation is turned on for that text view, yes.
Okay.
Which is the default.
Okay. So that means like basically the measurement cost is pretty severe for any amount of text that's going in there. Like unless it's the common words, like the is already going to be measured. It's going to be sitting in the cache somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right? But any new word that comes in, we're going to measure all the permutations of it, which is one of the reasons that text is one of the most expensive operations on
yep.
the platform.
We looked at this and like all this expensive calculations around measurement and laying words is more than 90% of the work we need to do to just show that sentence on the screen.
And how big is the cache? So if it actually gets pre-populated with all the those and all the, you know, the common words, how many words are we actually storing in there?
I don't have the exact number. It's big enough that in languages like English, you will hit the cache quite a lot. But we do eventually kick things out. I don't have the exact number.
Yeah.
But words and will probably never be kicked out. Yes.
Right.
Also, like if you have several text views rendering in several different fonts, like all of those different words will be hitting the same cache. So the more varied that your text on the screen is, the less hits you're going to have into the cache because the more of a variety of things you have in there.
Right, because they're all sharing the same space and they all have different measurement properties. So if everybody could just bear with us and use the same font at the same size, it would help performance immeasurably on the platform. Thank you.
Another thing we've done, again, in P, so we have this new feature called pre-measured text. And the thing we're trying to do is take this to a new level. So the word cache has existed for several releases and is a very nice way of hitting this performance, so actually being able to improve the performance of layout. But again, we run into things like the cache gets full, or we run into things like even though we knew the text beforehand, you don't give us the text to render until the actual rendering phase, so until we actually want to display it, which means we have to do all of this measurement work on the UI thread in order to be able to render the text. And one of the ideas that came up was, well, sometimes we may have this text beforehand anyway. Say you're an app that gets content from like an online source and you're just showing a stream of content, you probably have that text before it hits the screen. So the idea behind pre-computed text was, well, what if we could do this 90% of the work beforehand so that we have all this information and we could cache the information related to that specific piece of text, not just what's in the cache. So pre-computed text, what it does is you run it on the background thread, you give it the text you know you want to render, and it will do all of the measurements, all of these things we've been talking about, and actually store the results of all that information. So that then when you set it on a text view, we have that 90% of the work done specific to that text. So even if the cache was overflown, we have that data saved. Does that make sense?
It does, although I heard in some discussion recently, like there's always a trade-off between performance and memory, right? So if we're asking it to do this, then we are going to be taking up more memory in the cache, if nowhere else, to store this information. But I didn't quite get that, because if we're going to end up displaying it anyway, wouldn't we end up doing that measurement? Like, why are we taking more memory cost for doing the pre-computer approach than we would for just doing it normally?
Well, it's a trade-off of memory cost versus time that we take to render, right?
Yeah, but okay. So back it off to preppy.
Mm-hmm.
And on the UI thread at the point where they want to render it, we're going to go in and do all the measurement with all the permutations for hyphenation and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to render the text.
Yes.
Okay. So now in P, fast forward to P, then we're going to pre-compute on a background thread. Point out too, like this is an opt-in API.
Yes, this is not enabled by default because it does require you having the text beforehand. Yes. If you're going to do pre-computed on a background thread when you need it, you're just adding the cost of creating a thread and waiting for the result.
And that would be the technical term is silly. So you've got the background thread, you're opting into this API, you're asking us to pre-compute this stuff, we're putting it in the measurement cache, we're doing all the calculations, and then later you come in and say, I want to render it. Is there anything happening in this process besides spinning up the background thread if you needed to? That we wouldn't have done in the preppy case already?
Not really. I think we're just enabling you to do that beforehand and getting it off the critical path.
Okay.
If you indeed have a block of text, a bigger one that you need to render it, there's also something else that you could do. You could break it into smaller texts and display it in a recycler view. Like this, you would only load the text that's needed. So let's say that you have a very long block of text. If you just split it into, let's say, paragraphs in recycler view items, then you wouldn't need to load all of the sudden all that big block of text. You wouldn't need to measure it. But rather, you would just use all the functionality that recycler view brings and load only those parts that are needed.
Okay.
Yeah, the key thing to understand here is that when you give text view a text, it lays out the entire text you gave it. So if you gave it an entire book, we're going to try and place that entire book into lines. So what Florina is referencing is, well, if you know your text is long and it has paragraphs, try and break it down so that we're only trying to lay out the pieces that will actually be on screen.
Okay.
And that's a huge performance gain for your app.
Or just try to read shorter books. I think that might help as well. Interesting. Okay, so in the recycler view case, combining that with the pre-computed text, pre-measured text.
Pre-measured.
We should point out that the API is changing. The developer preview that came out had pre-computed.
Measured text?
It was called measured text, and now it's called pre-computed text.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're confused because you're looking in the reference docs,
sorry.
pre-computed text is the one to look for as of the next developer release. Okay, so in the recycle review case, if you decide to break up this monolithic chunk of text into separate items, you know, recycle review or whatever other, you know, scrolling solution that you have with different text views, however you break that up, then you would sort of detect when you're going to need that thing, send it off to the background thread to pre-measure so that by the time you need it, it's much faster to do. And I think the benchmarks are tricky because, you know, it depends on what and how you're measuring and all that stuff. But I thought, as you were saying, like this step of text rendering is sort of 80 to 90% of the time that we spend doing this thing. So if you can do all of that stuff ahead of time at an idle time, then so much the better, because then you're down to, you know, 10 to 20% of the time that you would have taken on the UI thread.
It makes a huge difference.
And if you combine this with stuff that we were doing in recycle review paging and the prefetch stuff. So Chris Craik had done some prefetch stuff about a year ago, which basically allows you to hook into idle time during, is it specific to recycle review? I believe so. And then you can get a call back and do some work while the recycle review, while the UI thread wasn't doing other work. So that could be an appropriate time for you to say, okay, now go do this other stuff.
Actually, to span some more, if you're displaying text with spans in your recycle review, instead of just passing, let's say, I don't know, a list of strings, you could just pass a list of spannables and then move that process of going from strings to spannables on the background thread. So in your, let's say, paging example, whenever you're getting the data and preparing it to be displayed on the background thread, then there also do that change from string to spannable.
I see.
So then
okay.
Your text view only needs to display that text
yeah.
without doing all of that work of converting from just string to a spannable on a UI thread.
Yeah, interesting. Because like I would say the pre-computed text stuff is just the most recent thing that we're doing in terms of trying to make things more background thread friendly. So the prefetch stuff last year was pretty interesting. There's other stuff going on with paging and recycle review. And then this text stuff, it's very specific to text, but there's an overall effort to make it easier to do stuff on the background thread, because more and more the default with devices is to have these multi-cores, and yet we have this single monolithic UI thread. Wouldn't it be nice if we could take advantage of multi-processing?
Yeah, and I think in general, what we're trying to do is create these best practices for developers. That's the same thing we also tried with Room, where we're trying to ensure that developers don't do expensive things on the UI thread, like inserting stuff in a database. So I think overall, as a platform, we're going in that direction where we're trying to both help developers and guide developers on moving their work on a background thread.
Right. And I think it's a practice that we would like people to have in general, but I think there are ways that we can improve the platform to make it easier, specifically in the text area. Like, it was possible for you to do some of this stuff, but man, you kind of had to hack around our APIs in order to enable that. And now we're sort of building it in at a more fundamental API level to make it a lot easier than it used to be.
Strongly nodding here.
Yes.
Not visible in the podcast.
Let the record show that Florina was nodding. Okay. So that was one new API thing. Do you want to talk
yes.
about some other new stuff in P?
There's a bunch of stuff coming in P. Another one that's exciting for developers as well as for users, we've implemented Magnifier. And the Magnifier, what is everyone complains about text selection and how it's hard to move handles around. So we've added this new widget that basically when you're holding down a handle, we will show a zoomed in version of the space you're trying to place the handle in to make it easier for you. And you'd say this is just a user-facing feature, right? Like users are the ones selecting. But because we obviously wanted to maintain the consistency between TextView, WebView, and Chrome, we exposed this as a widget so that WebView and Chrome could use it as well. So now we have new APIs on the platform, which are Magnifier, and it has Show, Update, and Dismiss. And basically, Show will just show a new pop-up. It's actually a child surface on top of the surface that we're trying to render just to make it synchronize as well as possible. But it's a zoomed in version of around the coordinate you gave us. And then you can update if you tell us like the content of it changed and dismiss it. We've done a very specific UX implementation of it in TextView. So for example, we will snap to the horizontal line so that while you're moving within one line, we first, at the very beginning of this, we did not snap. We just followed your finger. Turns out that's extremely nauseating. Having the floating zoomed in pop-up just kind of move around was really not a good experience. So we now mostly snap to the line where the cursor is and only move a line up or down when the cursor itself also does. But horizontally, for example, we don't follow the cursor character by character, which we did at the beginning, because then you saw the magnifier kind of jump between characters. And instead, we implemented this kind of smooth, horizontally, we follow your finger, vertically, we follow the cursor kind of UX that we're really happy with. It feels really natural. So we are planning on publishing some guidelines around like how to implement the magnifier in your own use case to make sure we all have this nice experience.
So to clarify, like you said, we enabled it as this sort of generic surface that you could zoom.
Yes.
Specifically because WebView and Chrome may want to do something similar. But to be clear, it's not specific to text at all. It is just a surface.
It started as like the text use case if we were looking at selection, but it turns out that magnifying an area is kind of a generic use case that you could have anywhere. As we're releasing it in P, it is very focused into this one use case we were trying to fix. So for example, in P, the magnifier is a certain set of dimensions that you can't change. We are planning on expanding in this in the future, but at this moment, it's very tailored for the text experience, but it is a widget that you could just use anywhere. The accessibility folks came to us like super happy because this is something that they could use to just zoom in text in general.
It's cool. I should point out that the other approach that we tried to implement was to just have people have daintier, smaller fingers.
Because we're really,
it's just a workaround for the fact that we all have such fat fingers that we can't see the handles. But I think it seems to work in general.
But yeah, we're excited. This should be a very big improvement.
Yep. Cool. What else we got?
We've got a bunch of changes around Linkify. So if you're familiar with Linkify, it's an API that has existed since API 1, and it is the API that allows you to detect entities in your text. So you give it a text, and it will tell you there's addresses or there's phone numbers. The problem until P, this was backed up by basically regexes, which were quite faulty in many cases. Plus, if you're trying to find addresses, for some historical reasons, the find address method was inside WebView. So we spun up an instance of WebView to find addresses in your text. Again, historical reasons.
May the record show that I'm crying.
In P, we've tried to improve on this. So we're building up on what we did in O with Smart Text Select. So if you remember in O, we added this feature when you're trying to select a word, we look at the text around it and we try and decide if it's an entity. So say you selected York within New York, we try to detect, oh, wait, that's a place and that's more than one word, and we expand the selection. So we already had all this functionality that was detecting places and addresses and phones. So in P, we've applied it to Linkify and say, well, it could just detect all these links like Linkify. If I did, but wait, it's actually even better because it's not a bunch of regexes. It's actually a machine learning model that is quite trained to do this. The main drawback of this, though, is because we're using a model and the model is loaded from disk, it has to be done asynchronously. So that's kind of the reason why we haven't swapped Linkify and TextView by default. Linkify and TextView is still using the old stuff. But if you're fine with this happening asynchronously, we have new APIs that allow you to use the machine learning Linkify and find better entities. Plus, they've added a bunch of new entities. So the old system only had phone numbers, addresses, emails, and links. Whereas now, for example, the new models can do things like flight codes and expand on new kinds of entities even by just pushing new models.
Donut names, maybe.
Yeah, that would be
okay.
A good one.
All right, I'll suggest that. So I assume that the way you use the API is along the lines of opting into it, saying I would like you to do this, you know, new Linkify, whatever it's called, and then you supply a callback, and you get a callback when the operation is done.
The way it works is similar to the old Linkify in that you ask for the text classifier, which is our entry point into the machine learning models that do this. You ask it to generate links on a piece of text, and then it has an apply method that basically applies URL spans onto your text. So again, we're always back to spans. And then you set that on your text view. It's the same as the old Linkify. It also used to work like this. The difference was there's also this attribute on text view called autolink, which did this for you. And that's what we haven't hooked up yet just because of the asynchronous problems. So you get a text classifier, you generate the links, and you apply them to your text.
Oh, it would actually go
API flow.
under the hood and set the properties on the text view directly, so it would just be invalidated.
If you use auto link on text view, it just does all of this for you and sets the text on the text view. The key point now is when you call this generate links, you want to make sure you're on a background thread because it loads a model, etc. And then you just apply the links to the text. And if you were using, like we said before, your spannable text directly from text view with the buffer type spannable, you could just apply it onto there.
Okay. Cool. And then finally, just to wrap things up, we also have some stuff in layout in P.
Yes. We have a bunch of like very small features that we're gathering together as just like text layout improvements. We've been looking at how UX designers give designs to people and how hard or easy that is to implement with a text view. So we found, for example, designers love to give distances between text and its margins as from the baseline of the text. So that's where the letters sit, but not necessarily the bottom of the text. Whereas traditionally, text view has worked around the bounds around the text. So say from the very lowest descent of a letter to the ascend. But we've never worked with baselines before. This is all information that you had available if you kind of poked into text view, but we weren't exposing it very easily. So we've added two new attributes, which allow you to align the margins of the text view with the first baseline or the last baseline, just making it easier for you to say, well, from the first baseline to the top of my text view should be 20 dp. And we just internally, we're actually just changing the padding like we would have in the past, but we're just doing that for you, making those calculations much more obvious.
Right. So we did actually, I mean, we have always used baselines, but it's always in horizontal alignment. So for example, layouts, you could specify with relative layout or now constraint layout, you could say, I want this baseline to align with this baseline of this other thing over here. And these text objects have the baseline property and knowledge, but it was always horizontally based. The problem was designers would come to us, especially with a bunch of the material design stuff that came in Lollipop, is they would have this grid array in their view, and they would have these mocks where they would say, okay, well, and then this one needs to be, you know, 16 dips from the top of the container view or whatever. And there was really no way to do that other than the developer calculating padding and setting it manually.
Yep. Also, if your text size changes, then all of those calculations would change again. So it's kind of a cumbersome thing.
But again, if we return to the point where we're asking people to use the same font at the same size, then that would no longer be a problem. Right. Okay.
So that's one of them. Another change we did, again, it's a similar feature. A lot of designers will give us the line height, as in the distance between the very top of one word and the top of the word in the line below, as one unit. And text view, traditionally the APIs we had was to set the text height and then a multiplier or an addition that just sets how distance one line is from another. So again, this is just a calculation you had to do. If your text is 10 points high and you're being asked to have a line height of 15, you had to calculate, okay, the difference between 10 and 15 is those 5, so you had to use the addition or the multiplier. Again, just to make that math easier for you, we now actually have a line height attribute that you can set directly and it does that calculation for you. It's kind of just a nice convenience method.
Okay. And then speaking of line height, we also, I would call it more of a bug fix that we handle a IE10N situation better.
We had this very bad bug for many releases where it especially happens in IE10N cases where sometimes when we can't render a glyph, we have this concept of a fallback chain of fonts in Android where we would use other fonts to try and find the glyph that we're missing. And it happens that sometimes these fonts we're using may be taller than the original font. And we were not taking this into account. So when fallbacks were happening, you could find that two lines of text were overlapping each other just because we were only taking into account the dimensions of the first font, not of all the fonts used. So we fixed this and we fixed a bunch of overlapping issues that, again, especially happen in IE10N cases. The main thing is we've activated by default, but we also know some people might have had workarounds for it. So we added an attribute that you can actually turn off if this is a problem for you.
And again, one of the reasons that we ship preview releases now, so that you can try this and see if it's an issue.
Please do.
And let us know if there's a problem. Cool. I think that was all I had in my mind. Did we not cover something that you wanted to talk about?
I'd just like to mention that we do have a talk at I.O. this year called Best Practices in Text, where we will cover some of these things in a lot more in depth into like best practices in text, things we've discovered that were surprising to us and we wish everyone knew. So please tune into that.
It'll also be easier to see the code in that talk than it was on this podcast. And you have also been writing stuff on Medium.
And
Twitter. So we can link to that stuff from the show notes.
More spuns on Medium and Twitter.
And check out the new fabulous documentation. It, it's always exciting when there's docs to go along with APIs.
Cool.
So I guess that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.